Thank you so much. This is... it's heartwarming. You know, my heart's so full just being here at the conference, the convention, with all these alcoholics. It's just, it's mind-blowing. And it's a real honor to be able to speak here. 31 years ago, I would have never guessed, you know, that I'd be asked to speak anywhere, let alone here, you know. So I'll tell you a little bit about what it was like. I was born in Edmonton, Alberta, Canada, and I was adopted when I was 3.5 months old by Americans that were living in Alaska, and they brought me home to be their little girl. And I knew I was adopted from the age of, you know, as soon as we started saying our prayers at night. And I had a wonderful family. I had a wonderful mom and a wonderful dad and a brother, and I had a good life. And you hear this in the rooms a lot, and I just never quite felt enough. And I filled at every opportunity, didn't realize that that's what I was doing. I sought lower companions from an early age. And I got into a lot of trouble around puberty. And it was so interesting because it was just like there was a light switch that clicked off. And instead of being this good kid and this wonderful student, I became as bad as I could be, you know. It's hard to even imagine that I was that same person, but I robbed your house. I vandalized. I robbed my friends' houses. I stole cars. I snuck out my bedroom window just about every opportunity I could get. And, you know, I think deep inside, even though I was this frightened, terrified little girl that was acting really bad, I know today I just wanted to be loved. I just wanted to be loved. And I didn't understand that you could be good and be loved, you know? I had it a little bit backwards. The one thing that I did know is that I really, really wanted to be, a virgin till I got married. That was definitely not destined to be, but that was my goal. I was born a Catholic, Mary Monica, and so, like I said, I've been sneaking out my bedroom window, and I met a guy that was 19 years old, and I got raped. And it was so interesting because in life, we have so many different avenues that we can go. You know, we're given so many opportunities. And here I couldn't stop the kind of behavior I was doing, the breaking into houses, the things that I was getting a fix from. And there was an intervention. And it was a seemingly bad intervention. And my parents, being the good Catholic parents that they were, protected me and locked me in the house. They don't remember that. I remember that. And it was a very, very dark time for me. I'm very social, and I wrote in a journal, and I walked on the railroad tracks out of town to get exercise, and I got my driver's permit, and I played cards with my mom. I did all these things with my mom that I never got to do or never had any interest in doing. And then I gave my baby up for adoption. And I was told that was the right thing to do. And I had a choice right before I signed the papers that I could keep her, and I knew in my heart that it was the right thing to do. That she deserved parents, two parents, you know? And thank God I made that decision, because I would have drugged her through hell and back. And not too long after that, I went down to move to the lower 48. We moved to Sacramento, California. And I'd missed a lot of school, and I started my senior year in high school. And I wanted to be different. I wanted to be a lady. I didn't want to be that same girl that beat you up. And I just hadn't had a drink yet. You know, up in Alaska, I had done all the other forms of alcohol. I've heard them called condiments. You know, it's the 70s, right? So, and I just love getting out of myself. And it was about age 19 when I found alcohol, and I found specifically scotch, and I drank it on the rocks, and it was magic. It was absolute magic. I felt enough. And then as it does, it turns, and it turned on me, and I wasn't enough. I wasn't enough anymore. And a series of events happened. I started fighting in low-class bars again. I did all those things that women do when we're drinking. I started seeking other forms of alcohol. And I ended up on the floor of my bedroom in the fetal position wanting to die. I just wanted to die. Couldn't stand the pain of being alive. And what do you do with that? What do you do when you want to die and you're alive, you know? And it never occurred to me to end it. And a few months earlier, I had been 12-step by a coworker. I had come to work with bloody knuckles from a fight. And he had told me that he had been sober and Alcoholics Anonymous. And I told him I needed to go to the gym, because I almost got my butt kicked and I need to go to the gym. You know, the big book talks about that, you know. We find other forms of alcohol. So I did go to the gym. And while at the gym, I'll never forget this girl. I wonder if I'll ever see her again. Her name was Kathleen. And she had big brown eyes and this long flowy brown hair and long legs and an aerobics instructor. And she had a really cute voice and she's just so sweet. Not at all like me. And I wanted to be her. I didn't want to look like her. I wanted to be her. I researched her. I knew where she worked, her boyfriend, her car, job. I wanted to be her, right? And I couldn't even, like, look at her and make eye contact or talk to her because I was so intimidated by her glory and her beauty, you know. I was in the deficit, you know. So about 2 years later, after I got sober, I'm in a department store doing makeup. And this beautiful girl walked in the room. And it was her, and there was nothing about her I wanted. Nothing. Because this program filled me up from the inside out. And that's what this will do for you. If you stay. Just stay. And so as a new good little newcomer girl is going to my first noon meeting in my cute little skirt, and my little, you know, I look perfect, you know, outside was perfect, inside was a mess, hot mess, I might say. And I did what any girl does that needs a higher power. I found a guy, and he was very, very handsome. Back to sister speaking at another room right now. She was my first sponsor. And he was an old timer. He had a service commitment. He had a year of sobriety. And love at first sight. Girl meets boy on AA campus. So what happened there, I'll fast forward, is basically he called me and told, I got pregnant. Oh, missed that part. I got pregnant. Like, I'm like 30, 60 days sober and I'm pregnant. Very fertile, Myrtle, and he decides he wants his space, which is not a good call to get when you're pregnant and they have your car, and he had my car. So my sponsor told me we don't go looking for pain, so I didn't call him for the whole, like, 4 days. And, I mean, that's excruciating. 4 whole days, this is my higher power. He's handsome. I'm going to have the white picket fence, a little AA family and everything, and so I finally went over there. I called, no answer. I went over there, and door was locked, cut the screen, popped in that bedroom window, and there he was, standing there naked in front of the bed with this girl in the bed holding the covers, going, Kenny, Kenny. And I'm standing there, and my higher power is gone. And my bar was right across the street. And I remember what they told me. We don't drink no matter what. And I went to the payphone. Back then we had payphones. And I called some Alcoholics Anonymous people and I went to their home. And about a week later, I got the biggest gift I've ever been given in Alcoholics Anonymous. And I was sitting in a car with him, and he was going to go into recovery, and I was just kind of left in my perception on the wind to do my deal, to raise the child, to stay sober. And I'm sobbing, and I want to die. Pain's too great. My whole life was gone. And I asked him, I said, what am I going to do? And I looked at him, and he said, ask God to help you. You know what my first thought was? Yeah. And the second, I said to myself, God help me. And then the second time I said, God help me. And the third time I said to myself, God help me. From the depths of my being, I asked for help. And instantly I was at peace. There was no pain, there was no fear. There was nothing but just peace. And that has been the thing that I've hung on to. I've had many bottoms in Alcoholics Anonymous. I like my hair on fire. I've lost businesses. My child has been the victim of a violent crime. I've had lots of things in my life happen, as do we all if we stay sober. But I remember that. We don't pick up no matter what. And what I've done today for my sobriety is I've stayed in the center of the circle, the center of Alcoholics Anonymous. I work with other women. I go to meetings. And I have become a woman of dignity and respect and grace. That is not the girl that was fighting and robbing your house. And this is not anything that I have done. This is because of Alcoholics Anonymous. Being asked to speak here today is one of the second biggest gifts I've ever had. And that beautiful baby that I had, that beautiful little baby they got to bring me, that I got to raise on my own. Her father and I did get together, and we divorced when she was a year old. She'll have 5 months clean and sober in Alcoholics Anonymous next month. And that beautiful daughter that I gave up for adoption, when she was 19, she looked me up. We looked each other up within 6 months, or 6 months before. Within 2 weeks, 6 months before her 18th birthday, neither one of us could wait. She lives in Grand Rapids, Michigan today. She has two beautiful daughters, and she celebrated 21 years of sobriety April 1st. So the message here is, stay. Just stay. I've put 31 years together with so many dots that connect, I cannot tell you. If I would have ever guessed that my beautiful daughters would be sober in Alcoholics Anonymous as a result of my example, this is a family disease. Get a sponsor. Work your steps, and don't forget steps 6, 7, and 11. And that's been the biggest blessing to me. Thank you so much.
What a wonderful and powerful message. I don't know about the rest of you, when I got to Alcoholics Anonymous, I felt like and I turned myself in. I felt like a leper joining a leper colony. There was so much shame, and I didn't think that that would ever go away. I still remember the shoes I had on, because I didn't do anything but hang my head walking into those rooms, and I remember the penny loafers. I was blessed to get a sponsor early on in the program, and her name was Charlotte. She passed away recently with 40 years of sobriety. Charlotte never cut any punches. And I could tell this woman, I could be honest with her and tell her what was in my innermost heart. I could tell her the things I was afraid that people would figure out. And I remember saying to her, you know, Charlotte, are there fewer women alcoholics than men? Because I was going to a lot of meetings and I wasn't seeing a whole lot of women. We were always in the minority, always a few. And that made me feel even more ashamed. And she said, Dorothy, I don't think so. She said, there's some women who get here and they look in the door and they don't see anybody who looks like them. So they're afraid to come in. And she said, there are also others who just haven't gotten here yet. And that's why, Dorothy, you are needed here. So Charlotte taught me that I would always be needed in Alcoholics Anonymous, and that because I was given the gift of sobriety, I was also given the responsibility to be here when that woman who hasn't gotten here yet walks in the door, or when that woman who feels ashamed looks in and needs to see somebody who looks like her. I'm going to bring you our second speaker now. Her name is Donna T., and her home group is the Monday night Pitt Meadows meeting, and she's from Vancouver, British Columbia.
Welcome, everyone. My name's Donna, and I am an alcoholic. Welcome to everybody here. This is such an amazing gift. I was going to say, if I pass out, somebody just throw some water on my face and prop me back up so I don't miss anything. Thank you so much, Monica, for your story, and thank you to the committee for asking me to be here today. My sobriety date is June 30th, 2009, so I am just turned six, and you know, we talk about sharing our experience, strength, and hope, and though I don't much have much experience, I do have a lot of strength and hope, so I'm going to hopefully share that with you today. You know, I don't really tell my story, but I will qualify myself as an alcoholic. There's this beautiful line in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous that says, no human power could have relieved our alcoholism. You know, that lack of power. And I knew that to be true when I got here. I had this little boy at home who was massively brain injured and needed 24-hour daycare. He was tube fed and so vulnerable. And he had almost died not once, but twice because I was blacked out from alcohol and couldn't take care of him. And by the grace of God, somebody was in the house. But, you know, after that first time, I swore, you know, they say with solemn oath or without, and I swore with everything in my being and meant it to the core of my being that it would never happen again, that I was done. And as we all know, it happened again because I had lost the power of choice and drink. And that's such a powerful statement. You know, I walk with a lot of women in AA, and I was so grateful that that was the topic today. Because that's something I know about, because that's what's held me up for the last 6 years. And when women come to me and they say, you know, I chose alcohol over my child, I chose alcohol, and I can take them to that place, and I say, no, honey, you've lost the power of choice and drink, but I'm going to show you how to tap into something so much bigger than anything you've ever dreamed of. And we find that here. And for me, I've found it in the woman. You know, I'm beautifully and wonderfully sponsored by a woman named Angela H. in Vancouver. And the woman I am today is directly from that sponsorship. She has taught me about unconditional love, about acceptance, and turning to God. You know, the most beautiful thing about her sponsorship is that she knows she's not my solution. And she directs me back to the book, and she directs me back to God, and she directs me back to myself. And over and over and over again. There's never been judgment. And when I first came in, I was so full of judgment. You know, I had destroyed my life. I was, you know, a liar and manipulative and all this stuff, but I still, you know, didn't like you, you know? And it wasn't that I didn't trust the women. It was that I just didn't know how to be in relationship with you, because most of my relationships were based on what could you do for me? You know, I always laugh. I say, you know, I knew what to do with the boys. Like, we all have our superpowers, right? Like, that was easy. But when it came to the women, I didn't know how to have that intimacy. And I would sit in the rooms and I couldn't hear you because, you know, all I could think of was, oh my God, you're wearing those pants? Like, come on. And I couldn't hear what you were saying. And God knew what I needed. And I lived near a treatment center in the town where I cleaned up. And suddenly I was hearing all these fifth steps. And I mean, I was hearing a lot of fifth steps. God knew that I needed this. And suddenly I started to see that we're all the same. You know, I keep waiting for something really interesting, but it's the same. Our book is so clear, you know, it's not what it was like. It's what we were like. Because our it can be very different. I've had girls come to me that, you know, have been working a corner or been in jail and or lost every... That wasn't my it. But when they talk to me about that depth of loneliness, that fear, the insecurity, the shame, the remorse, the hope that it could be different. Every single one. Every single one. And that spiritual paradox of, as I learned to love the women here, I started to love myself. And I started to find a place of forgiveness and peace within myself, because I couldn't do it on my own. I needed to look at you, and I needed to see you, and I needed to love you and accept you. And then I went, hey, I'm not so different. And through that loving, beautiful sponsorship that guided me, I've been able to say to the women, you know what, honey, we talk about it until you don't need to talk about it anymore. Because I learned that from her. I learned to love the women in my life, even when they weren't being good girls. Because it's really hard. I don't know about you, but I came in here and I put the bottle down and it was worse. Everything I drank and used over was right here. And the best solution to my alcoholism was alcohol. And suddenly it was gone. And so I shot and I did yoga. I was doing yoga like 3 times a day. I was going to be a yoga teacher. And, you know, and boys, you know, like you said, a higher power and food and all these things to continue to fill that spiritual void. You know, I want an external solution for my internal condition. And all of those are so short-lived. And so I started to seek God in a really big way. At 7 months sober, I'll back it up a bit. At 2 months sober, I was on fire for Alcoholics Anonymous. I was so arrogant. I knew the book inside and out and just thought, I mean, I was a vision for you. And thought it would be a fantastic idea to leave my husband of 13 years and get in a relationship with a guy who was also 2 months sober. And my sponsor at the time would say to me, oh, honey, 2 ding-a-lings do not make a bell. But I thought, no, I'm good. And at 7 months, wait for it, because I know you're going to be very surprised, but it ended badly. And there I was, with no solution, in so much pain. And God, I was laying on my bed, and I thought, I don't know what to do. Nothing has changed. The only thing that's changed is I'm not drinking. I'm worse than ever. And I looked across the room, and there was a name of a woman in AA who had 12 years sober on this card. And, you know, I had her number, but of course I hadn't called her because I'm 7 months sober. I got it going on. And I reached for the phone, and I called her. And I believe that's when my sobriety really began. And I got really serious about Alcoholics Anonymous. And I started to seek this thing that I totally didn't understand, that I had no idea what it was, and I still don't. And I believe that our literature is so beautifully laid out for us. You know, it says we come to believe. We progress. We continue. It doesn't say you have to just, you know, I don't know why people think we come in here and put the bottle down and suddenly halos and wings and we're supposed to be these perfect people. That's not my experience. My experience is the women God brings to me are struggling with those issues of eating too much, sleeping around, working out too much, spending money they don't have. Because it takes time here, I think. But the beautiful thing about that is there's all these incredible women and men. You know, there's a lot of men in AA who are part of the reason I am the woman that I am today. Men with integrity, men that walk with dignity, that taught me about respecting myself because they treated me with respect. I didn't know what that was. You know, that have guided me through that. So I just am so grateful for that. But I have been blessed with these women that come to me because I'm very open when I share that it's been tough for me. It's been tough for me. I'm not the poster child. I thought it was going to be, you know, Bill Wilson, Bob Smith, and Donna. You know, like, and it has not been that. Like, I think sometimes women phone me because they're like, if she can stay sober, anybody can. I'm calling her. I need to know what's going on. And so it's been messy. And God knew exactly what I needed because He put the women in my life that loved me when I was not lovable. The women in my life that walked before me, you know, I have a beautiful girlfriend who's here today, Tracy, and she taught me about not gossiping. Not by saying anything, not by correcting me, but by gently directing the conversation in another direction. By gently never engaging in it. By gently turning the conversation back to me. And so by her example, I learned about that. You know, I watch the women in my life. I love the women in AA. You know, we come in here and we're still crazy, sexy, cool. You know, we still have that edge and we have all this experience. But we become these incredible mothers that teach our children about amend and about honesty and about integrity and dignity. And we become employees who, you know, show up at work in this beautiful way that we bring our traditions into our lives. It's an incredible thing. And I didn't come here for that. You know, I didn't come here for that. And, you know, I think about some of the women in my life that I have a girlfriend at home. She's getting a degree. She's raising a 3-year-old by herself. She's active in Alcoholics Anonymous. And it blows my mind. Like, I need a nap after changing the duvet cover. Because that is a big job. You know, and I watched them. You know, one of my sponsees, she decided she was going to go and fly off to Africa, and she spent months over there working with the, you know, underprivileged children, and she's working on a degree, and she's doing all this stuff, and we become women of substance, and we still got that really, you know, last night I was watching the girls dancing and partying, and we were grabbing people on the street, and still have that thing in us that's really cool. And I don't know if there's anything better than that. This beautiful thing. And you know that little boy I told you about? A year and a half ago, he passed away. And we talk about under any and all conditions, right? And I'm not sober because of Donna. Let's be clear on that. My car breaks down and I am on the suicide hotline, okay? Because that is big. But the power of the fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous, the power of having a loving God in my life. I showed up. I remember calling my sponsor and I said, I can't do it. I can't do it. And she said, honey, just show up. I promise you, God will show up. And guess what? God showed up. And through that whole ordeal, through everything, you know, I would say that little boy took his first breath in my arms and he took his last. And if I'd been loaded, I would have missed it all. Because that was my first instinct. I can't do it. Can't do it. If I go get loaded, I don't have to show up. That's what we're like. You know, an alcoholic in his cups is an unlovely creature. But I showed up. And when we're here, you know, when people are praying, you've got everything, because you can bring any kind of God you want here. I had Buddhists and Jewish people and people burning smudge and hugging trees. And where do you get that? We have something so magical here. You know, look around you today. There's this connection. You know, Bill talked about the language of the heart. Everybody's on their phones, and in this society, we're so connected that we're more disconnected than ever. But you get a couple alcoholics together, and something happens on a level that's magic. So if you're new here, if you're struggling, you know, it's okay. Find your people, because you can get through it. You know, I always say pain shared is pain halved. And joy shared is joy doubled. We get that here. I'm going to close with this. You know, I was talking to a beautiful woman who, when I was about, you know, around that 7 month time when I was really struggling, and I thought, you know, I was hearing all the stories of sunshine and rainbows and unicorns and everything was so beautiful. And I was sitting in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous wanting to die, because it wasn't easy for me. And I thought, God, is something wrong with me? Am I doing something wrong here? And she had shared a story from the podium, because I tell you, that night I went to that meeting, I was probably going to drink or worse. And she shared from the podium the reality of her story, where she had felt that same way. You know, somebody had said to her, oh, honey, you're right where you're supposed to be. And she said to them, is hanging myself right where I'm supposed to be, wanting to hang myself? The power of that, though, was I looked at her and I said, I'm not alone. I'm not the only one who feels this way. I'm not the only one who it's hard for. And I stayed. So I always share that you can stay here even though it's hard. You can stay here even if it doesn't look like what people tell you it's supposed to look like, or what you think it's supposed to look like. You can stay here through deaths and divorces and breakups and lost jobs. All of that has happened to me. And I stayed here because I found my people. I found the women who held me up and walked me through that and said, just one more day, baby girl, you can do it just for today. Who said, you know what, honey, we talk about it until you don't need to talk about it anymore. Who said, you know what, it's okay. It's okay. So I always say that, you know, if you're hurting, if you feel like you don't belong here, if you feel like you can't do it another day, find your people. They will hold you up. You know, I gave a 1 year medallion to a young girl, and she was just turned 19, and she said, you know what I love about AA is they don't tell you who God is or what God is. They just show you where God is. And if that's in me, it's in you too. So thank you so much for asking me to share today.
And what another wonderful and powerful message. You know, I was thinking about a Grapevine article that really touched me years ago when I was a new woman in AA. Because in Alcoholics Anonymous, we need young women, new in sobriety, and we need women with more time to be in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. And in this Grapevine article, and I don't remember the name of it, but I know if you go on the digital archives and you put in, where have all the flowers gone, this article will come up. Because that was the line that I remembered. And I remembered actually identifying with this article because a woman fairly newer in sobriety was writing this article, and she was complaining because she was saying that she was going to meetings and there were rarely women with double-digit sobriety. She was saying what would happen with where she was getting sober was that she noticed that women with double-digit sobriety started to have other priorities than going to meetings in Alcoholics Anonymous, whatever those priorities were. And she was saying that how much she missed women with time and how much she needed them. And that's why she referred to them, women with double-digit sobriety, as flowers. And she said, where have all the flowers gone? And whenever I'm at that place in my sobriety, because I've been sober a while, where I'm thinking that I don't really need to go to a meeting, I don't really want to go to a meeting, I remember that I'm a flower and that my being at a meeting is a gift as well as a responsibility. And then whenever I do it, guess what? It always ends up being a gift for me. Never fails. Our last speaker is Laura J. She's from the Yayas Women's Group, Shreveport, Louisiana.
Hi, everybody. My name is Laura, and I'm an alcoholic. My sobriety date is December 22nd of 97. What a fantastic job for both of y'all. That was beautiful. I was really stressing over the fact that I was going to be last and have to listen to everybody else's story and all of these things going through my head. And God's going to take over here in a minute, and I'm really dependent on that. I remember that one of the first times I told my story on a big venue, and really was kind of freaking out because there's not really a whole lot of flash or anything in my life. I'm just a normal, everyday woman who did not know how to drink, not how to go through the day without drinking. And I didn't realize that for the longest time, I just thought if I just could find a good man, if I could just find a good man, then everything would be okay. My parents divorced whenever I was young. My dad always wanted a boy, and I never had a really good relationship with my mother. And so I've in no way, shape, or form do I ever want to blame my parents for anything, because they were good people. We went to church every Sunday and Sunday night and Wednesday night. And but I kind of always tried to be something that I wasn't with my dad. And I learned how to wear all of these different hats. And I learned how to be one person around my mother, another person around my dad. I had a group of church friends that I learned how to be with them. And I had a group of my pothead friends, and I learned how to be with them, and I was one person at work, and so I was just this different person with whoever I was with. And probably one of the greatest things that ever happened to me was one day my boss called me a pothead, and I was highly offended, and because I thought that outside shell was obviously getting some cracks that I didn't know about. And so that's whenever I started drinking more and more, because that was socially acceptable. And so I am absolutely a real alcoholic, and that's alcohol brought me to my knees. Closer to the mic. That echo is awful. So whenever I You know, I was married for 10 years. I had 3 kids, and I walked all over that man. And alcohol took me to places that I never thought it would be. One of the beautiful things also is you always have heard, and I've always heard in meetings that you might hear your story and comparing myself to or the differences between people. And, you know, I've never been to jail. I've never been arrested. I've never had a DWI. I had my job. I had my car, and I had my kids. And, you know, like Donna was saying, the feelings inside still, I wanted to die. I absolutely, totally wanted to die. And, you know, knowing that my God was taking care of me even whenever I was still out there, because, you know, I had thoughts of suicide and my kids and couldn't leave them and things like that. And I was on my way to meet their dad one time, and my car spun out and 18-wheelers, and I was on a big highway, and I landed going the correct direction on the shoulder. And I can remember thinking then, okay, God, I hear you. I hear you. Thank you so much. And, so from that moment on, I didn't feel like I was suicidal, but, I just knew I was always looking for something. I tried therapy. I went to church. You know, I got religion big time for the longest time. And because of that, I think I was able to embrace AA once I did get here. But I had no real clue. For me, I had no idea that drinking was my problem. I just thought that I had to try harder. If I tried harder, if I was harder on myself, I mean, I could just beat myself up constantly about not being able to get up in the mornings. And whenever I didn't know that it was a blackout. I mean, I didn't know that was happening until I got into the rooms and I started hearing people talk about it. And I was going, oh, wow, so that's what that was. That was a blackout. So my God helped me prayer. Just when I was trying to be good again, once again, I was trying to go to church and I was trying to just date people. And my drinking, once again, I woke up one morning in one of those situations again. And it was like, I just had this, God, please help me have a good relationship. And so about a month later, I meet somebody, and he's got long hair and buffed up. And I just knew the Harley was around the corner, and proceeded to get wasted that night. And all we did was exchange names. And I was like, the next morning I woke up and said, whew, thank you, God. That was exactly what I did not need. And ran into him about a month later in the grocery store, and needless to say, found out that he was sober. He was an AA. And I can just remember being shocked. And, you know, some people need the DWIs. Some people need to lose their kids. Some people need to, you know, for you to be able to hit your bottom or to hear whatever it is you need to hear. God will speak to you. I'm trying to think of a way to put it. Some people need them. God may be knocking you on the head constantly, and it's whether or not we want to hear it. And so whatever knock on the head it takes for somebody to get, well, God knew for me, my knock on the head was a man, because that's what gets my attention. And so my knock on the head was this long-haired, buffed-up, Harley-looking dude, just my type, and that was sober. It kind of blew me away. And at first, my first thought actually truly was, good, somebody that is not going to drink my beer. And but you start really, truly realizing how much you drink whenever you're with somebody that's not drinking. And I can remember saying, you know, it's not really messing up my life, you know. So needless to say, I started going to meetings and I was still drinking. I would drink and I would get 3 days and I would drink. I'd get 4 days and I would drink and I would go to meetings. And the things that I was hearing in these meetings were things, you know, about it just takes one, you know, the first beer is the one that gets you. I was like, no, I can really drink about 8, you know. You can't really be an alcoholic if all you really do is drink beer. And so I had all of these preconceived ideas of what an alcoholic was, and I didn't believe that I fit. I went in there just you know, I cleaned out my closet whenever I was about 18 months sober and just kind of went, oh my God, I really did used to wear these to meetings all the time. It just, you know, and everybody was just so nice and so friendly, you know, you'd get these big old hugs and I didn't get it. I didn't know what a sponsor was. And so I got this one lady and, I can remember calling her and just being scared to death, going, okay, I'm calling. What do I do now? And she's like, well, have you made your bed? And I was like, made my bed? What? No. What is that? She said, well, you cannot get drunk on a day that you've made your bed. Okay. So I started making my bed, and it became this, that is my prayer in the morning. That is my, I have to do things physical, and I make my bed every morning. And that's my prayer to God each day. And coming home each day and the bed being made, it's kind of one of these things that I just have to do. It, you know, struggling, and I would turn around, I'd see the bed not made, I'd throw everything down. I was single with 3 kids, and so knowing that, and I didn't know about treatment. I didn't know that, I just didn't know anything. And so I came into AA scared to death, didn't know anybody, just a mess. And so Betty, absolutely, you know, some people, like I said, some people need the knock and a hit. Some people need a kick in the butt to get busy. Well, I was too scared. I would have run right out of here. Betty literally, and she was a scary lady. I mean, people talk about her now, talk about her being Black Belt Betty. And you know, and Betty loved me so much. She just loved me sober. And for the first time in my life, one woman had everything. They had the whole story. I was, you know, I had, because some people would have this part of the story, some people would have that part of the story, and for the first time in my life, somebody had the whole story. And through that, watching, she was an older lady, and she started getting dementia, and she had another sponsee named Kay, and we started kind of going, okay, what's wrong with Betty? And so we were able to start talking, for the longest time, it was like we were having an affair because, you know, we couldn't let Betty know because Betty thought she was still sponsoring me, but because she just, for then I was able to take care of Betty and I was able to take her to meetings. It got to where she couldn't drive. It got where she couldn't. And that commitment is what kept me sober for a long time, because during that time I had a daughter that was sneaking out every night and running away. And the commitments to AA are what keep me sober. There's no doubt about it. And getting in AA, getting in the middle of the circle. We've done that guy that I met. I can remember one thing that I think is real important, being real careful what you pray for. I was worried about, am I here for me or am I here to try to get this guy? And then I saw him with somebody else, you know, about 6 months down the road. And I can remember crying and being on my knees and crying and scared to death. And I got up and I went to a meeting. And so then from then I knew that I was sober for me. And I think that's real important as women. You know, we're in these relationships with men or not or other people and trying to love yourself and to respect yourself. And Kay is the one who absolutely taught me to be a lady. I started learning how to dress better. I learned how to have some respect for myself, getting involved in AA and getting, I was chairman on a tri-state for a couple of years and just being right smack in the middle of AA for several years. There's a women's retreat in Shreveport, and I was able to organize that. And that retreat is probably what helped my relationship with women probably more than anything, because we get to go there and we hang out in rocking chairs and we stay up all night playing games and you really get to know people on a, it's a lot easier than just the hour a day and things like that. But, I'm trying to fast forward. We did get married after we had 4 years sober, and, the fellowship of AA, just that we became the AA couple, and it was just It was beautiful. We were both very, very involved. We had five kids between us. It got really, really crazy. We're chairing Tri-State and we're just intergroup and just busy, busy, busy AA couple with all of these kids that were just, you know, the kids have absolutely put us through the ringer. About 13 years sober, my husband relapsed. And it was pretty incredible. I do know that, I mean, it's just like a shockwave through the entire community, all of our kids. It was, and he literally almost died. I had to learn how to dig deep inside myself, and because of the foundation that I had with God, I do know that I knew that I was going to be okay no matter what. I did the things that I needed to take care of myself. I went to Al-Anon and I practiced Al-Anon program. My sponsor told me a long time ago that AA saved my life and Al-Anon saved my sanity. And that is 100% true, because I have no control over what anybody else does. There was a point there where we went to, there was a cruise already planned, and when we went on the cruise, my boss was paying for it, and I had my daughter, all the other kids were gone. I had my daughter, and we went on this cruise, and I can remember walking onto that cruise and seeing all the alcohol, and it was all inclusive. And I remembered looking, and I was like, oh my God, I'm going to drink. And it was like, you know, why not? He's already done it. The shockwave's already happened. The whole community is expecting it. Why not? And I can remember going to the room, and one of the things that I had to do whenever I first got sober was just kind of lie to myself and kind of go, well, I'm going to go to this meeting, and if I still want to drink, then I'll drink. Well, I'll drink tomorrow. And that's how I was able to finally pull some days together and have a sobriety date that stuck. So we go to our cabin, and it's this little bitty cabin, and I look at the schedule of events for the cruise, and I look on the cruise, and it says there was an AA meeting at 6 o'clock. And I went, so I kind of did the same thing. I was like, okay, I'm going to go to this AA meeting, and if I still want to drink, I'm going to drink. And there was five people in that meeting, and those people kept me sober the entire cruise. And that was God. That was absolutely 100% God. That was not me. I have so many God stories. It's amazing how he takes care of us. I don't have any idea what the time is. I'm sure you'll tell me. Fast forward, he was able to, he went 90 days in treatment and got sober again. And, you know, the last four and a half years have been, for the first 3 years were probably the best years of my sobriety. It was just amazing. We've done amazing things, but the last year's been pretty darn rough. My husband has taken pain pills again. He had shoulder surgery, and that's scary to the depths of my soul. But once again, I know that I've got to take care of myself. My mother has had breast cancer, and my daughter that's got two grandkids. It's kind of went off the rails, and we have a 5-year-old again, and the 16-year-old is pretty crazy. Life is happening, and it's like I've heard, it's very, very, very messy. Once again, I know that God's got it. I know that God's going to take care of me as long as I continue to go to meetings. I've got sponsees that call me every day. On the worst days, it seems like every single one of them call, and that's how it works. I know that that's God taking care of me. I know that I'm supposed to do the right thing no matter what is going on around me, and AA and Al-Anon have taught me how to do that. My favorite saying that I read on a pretty regular basis is the St. Teresa Anyway. And it ends with, because in the end, it's not between you and them, it's between me and God anyway. And so I am supposed to do the right thing. And one of the right things is the relationship that I've had with my mother has always been pretty rocky. And she was diagnosed with stage 4 lung cancer. And because we've been so blessed financially, that would have never happened if we were still drinking. We were able to buy our house. And I see my mother every day. I talk to her every day. And she was living in this little travel trailer. And we've been able to buy our house. And I have some compassion for my mother that I never believed would have happened. I can remember my sponsor telling me 10, 15 years ago, someday you're going to have some compassion for your mother, and I never believed it. It's true. It's really there. And we've got these grandkids that are adorable and wonderful and filling our life with joy. And I've got these sponsees it's funny how, you know, my sponsor drops her phone in the water and I dropped mine in the water. It just kind of works that way. The same kind of things seem to be happening. I've got a sponsee that's going through custody stuff. It's God knows, you said, to find your people. God puts you together, and it's amazing how he works. I'm glad this is over. Thanks, y'all.
And another wonderful and powerful speaker. I love the God stories. When I got to Alcoholics Anonymous, I didn't think that God cared about me, for sure. And I had a lot of doubt, and I had a lot of trouble with step 2, and I had a lot of trouble with step 3. And one of the things that, and even after I was sober for a long time, I still have my doubts. And Charlotte would say to me, whenever you doubt God's love, look at Tony. Now I have to tell you who Tony is, because that's a little bit of a miracle of my sobriety. When I was 13 months sober, I stayed out of relationships, by the way, my whole first year. Not because I was good, but I was scared. And Charlotte didn't pull any punches. She said, Dorothy, keep your dress down and your drawers up. Let men respect you for your sobriety. And at 13 months sober, I went to another country. I went to the Caribbean and I went to Barbados. Accidentally picked up a drink because I wasn't following directions. I was out dancing and thought I was drinking club soda. It was vodka. I spit it out and said, God, if I make it through the night, I promise I'll go to the AA meeting in the morning. And I didn't want God to think I wasn't serious, so I was the first person at the AA meeting. He claims he's been following me ever since. And we were married 29 years last May. Our life revolves around Alcoholics Anonymous. And we had the privilege of doing a lot of service together in AA. Now, I want to tell you, it's 12:38. This meeting ends at 1. I promise to give you some time. So anyone who would like to share for 2 minutes, you want to come up to the mic, and I'm going to give you 2 minutes. Till the time is up. Mic is over here. Come this side, please. Come this side.
Hi, everybody. It's great to be here, isn't it? My name is Lynn. I'm an alcoholic. I got sober in Wayne, New Jersey. And now I live down near Tampa in Land O'Lakes. What I wanted to share with you is for the women who came in with not a very dynamic, exciting drama story. I never drank a lot. My dad was sober when I was 17. He's sober 55 years today. And my sobriety date is November 21st, 1990. We celebrate together, my dad and I. I was afraid to drink. I didn't want to be like him. When I came in, the guys stayed away from me because they knew he'd kick his ass. So I'm sober today, but I can tell you I came in drinking only 6 months and drinking wine, blacking out on 6 ounces. So if your story's little and it's not dramatic and you think you belong here, you belong here, because I knew I did. Thank you.
Hi, everybody. My name is Marilyn, and I am an alcoholic. I want all of you to be as enthusiastic as I am about my sobriety. And I want you to feel the power that us women have, and I want you to uplift yourself the way I do every day. And so when I hear women say, well, I have 5 years, you know, and I'm having a hard time. And the one thing that I always tell women is have some patience, because you need patience in order to get to where I am today. And so when women come to me at 10 years and they say, you know, I wish I was better. You know, I should really be better. And I always tell them, have patience, because I had patience. And when women come to me at 20 years and they say to me, gee, you know, I'm not that enthusiastic anymore. And I tell them, then hang out with me, because I have the joy of living. And the reason I have the joy of living is because I had the patience and the determination to hang out with people who were positive, who could give me what they had. And so when I came in, my sponsor knew Bill W. I am now going to celebrate 42 years of sobriety in November. And you want to know something, ladies? My daughter died 2 years ago. I've been sexually abused. I had a bad marriage. I've had 20 years of heartache. But you know what I did? I hung around with another woman, and she gave me what she had. And that's what I want to give to you today. I want to give you what I have. I have the enthusiasm to still stay sober, and I hope you get it too. God bless you all.
Hi, everybody. I'm Rosemary. I come from Chicago. My home group is the Hyde Park Women's Group. I love you all. I want you to know the power of love. I've been to AA meetings since November 23rd, 1986. I've gone to meetings. I went to a meeting in Canada, in Mexico, in Belize, in Peru, in Panama, also Australia, Hong Kong, Taipei, Turkey, England, Germany, I can't remember them all. Russia. I really enjoy seeing those flags at the flag ceremony. Think about the people in those countries when you go. But in the United States, I've been to meetings in California. I went to a 4A meeting in California. I went to a 4A meeting in Illinois. 4A is Alcoholics Anonymous for atheists and agnostics. If you are an atheist or an agnostic, know that you belong here too. It's okay. Because I've been one and I'm here, and it's okay. Continuously creating spirit in whose matchless energy all things have their origin, and by whose influence our minds are daily renewed in curiosity and hope. But the greatest thing that we have is love. the love we can find inside ourselves and the love that we can find when we love the other people in the meeting. Thank you.
Hi, I'm Ginger. I'm a gratefully recovering alcoholic. I'm from Rhode Island. And I want to say what a great meeting this is. And women, we not only speak the language of the heart, but we speak the language of womanhood. And that's something extra special, powerful. I used to drink with the men because... can you hear all right?
I can hear.
Okay. I used to drink with the men because you weren't my friend. You wanted my man. You were a backstabber. You talked about me. Well, you know how I know I'm getting better? Because you're the best people on earth. You taught me how to be sober, how to be a woman of dignity and honor by your example. And now I hopefully can pass that on to other people. We're so awesome. There must be, I don't know how many billion people on earth. And we've given birth to all of them. All of them. We have done that. And I don't know if that's biology or God. But God has given us a special gift. And I'm glad that all of you are here to share it with me today. Thank you.
Okay. Hi, my name is Julia, and I'm an alcoholic. I come and bring you good tidings from Berlin, Germany. Yay! Woo! I want to tell you that I am an intelligent agent. I have the T-shirt that says, I'm an intelligent agent and a spearhead of God's ever-advancing creation, and so are you. So we have work to do. And we are there to do it. It's from We Agnostics, page 49 of the big book. I'm telling you that we work a program in Berlin, Germany, and we read the book. We're big book thumpers, and we love it. And I'm also, I'm also here to tell you that in our group in Germany, there are more women than men. Yeah. Because the women are very active. And we are looking for sponsors for men. We look for men who have sobriety to come to our meeting because there's all these new guys and they need sponsors. So we have to look for the guys. So we rule. I really enjoyed the meeting. Thank you for the meeting. My sobriety date is September 23rd, 1985. I got sober in Paris. And I had a sponsor, and her name is Betty Simpson, and she was from Phoenix, Arizona. And I had her for 1 year. 1 year. And she took me through the book, and then she left me. She went back to the States, and I moved to Germany. And then there was Laurie. And Laurie was from California, and she was my sponsor. She was an army wife, and I had her for 3 years. And she told me when I was two years sober, she told me she wouldn't hug me anymore because hugging me was like hugging a cold fish. I was so much full of self-hatred that I needed to learn to love myself. She was tough. And then she left. And I've been in AA. When I come to America, it's like being in AA candy store. It's like, I've got to stop. I got to come. I come here to resource. And I tell you what, there's work to do. There's a lot of people that need you and that need us, and we need to do, and we need to go out and do it, and not only in America, but in Germany and everywhere. So anyway, I'm very grateful to be here, and I love you all, and you love me, I can feel it. Thanks.
Hi, family. My name is Gloria, and I'm a grateful recovering alcoholic. I'm a newcomer. I have 16 months sober. I was told to do this as a suggestion because this is my first international meeting, and I'm happy and grateful to be here. I was sponsored to be here. They gave me a round trip ticket and everything. But I have a problem. I don't have a hotel. So if anybody can help me, I would be grateful. Thank you for letting me share.
Hi, my name is Karen, and I'm a very grateful alcoholic. I come from Kansas City, Missouri, North Oak Women's Group, and my sobriety date is September 27th, 1969. That's 45 years, 9 months, and 6 days, but who's counting? I want to tell you that I've been around a long time, and we all read the promises. But I've lived the promises. Everything that was promised to me has been delivered. And as I said to someone on the bus, Alcoholics Anonymous is a really wonderful thing. Our lives are changed for the better. And then again, they can be changed for the worse. Alcoholics Anonymous means more to me because of the bad times I've had than because of the good times. I've been able to do a lot of traveling. I've had a good job. But 11 years ago, my husband died. Then my dog died. And then my daughter was killed in an airplane crash. And I stayed sober. There are 1,000 excuses to drink, but I stand here to tell you there is not one good reason to drink. You hang on to the people sitting next to you in a meeting, and you will survive. No matter what it is, I guarantee you, you can stay sober through it. I just bless every single one of you, and I hope you all get the same thing that God has given me. Thank you.